podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's a special. It's Neil Atkinson and Rory Smith. You know what it's about. We're not going to waste your time. We're going to get stuck right in. By the way, Legacy Fans is indeed the greatest Peel session no one's ever heard. But let's we'll move along as we go all the way through it. Rory, it's been threatened for years and it's felt like a threat for years. This doesn't feel like a threat.
No, this one's not. This one's got a website, so you know it's real. If something's got a website, then it's happening. Funny, if I was listening to quite a lot of stuff this morning as I was walking the dog in what proved to be my one bit of peace and quiet of the day, which is obviously Spurs then went and sacked Mourinho because there's not enough to do. I think the initial reaction was, we're kind of conditioned into, there's a little bit of boy who cried wolf about it, do you know what I mean? Like, we're conditioned to think this is what they're actually trying to do. You saw Gary Lineker and stuff doing it yesterday. What they're trying to do is get more control out of UEFA. They want commercial control of the revamped Champions League. They want this, that, and the other. This isn't like that. This is real. They are committed to it. They've worked it all out. They've filed the legal papers. Certainly Juve and Man United have resigned from the European Clubs Association, which is that's a massive step.
So Chelsea and Liverpool, I think, at the time of talking.
Agnelli and Woodward, at least, have resigned from from various UEFA committees that have got long names. This is real. This isn't a threat. I think there's still maybe some brinkmanship further down the road, but the idea itself is not brinkmanship. It is not a ploy to get something else. This is what they want.
It's what they want. The thing to say, and the thing I'd like us to talk about, is that they are still quite disparate. And I think that this is why this might not be difficult to resolve. So what concerns me about any hope of a resolution now is that, for instance, Real Madrid and Tottenham Hotspur are quite disparate football clubs with quite disparate wants and needs from this. So Real Madrid qualify for the Champions League every year, and a lot would have to change in Spain to threaten that position. Tottenham don't qualify for the Champions League every year, and 6 into 4 doesn't go. And I think that where people will make a mistake is just to lump the 12 who have lumped themselves together and act as though, well, it's all just about money. It is all just about money. But how they see and where they view themselves as getting greater security, it is different how the Italian clubs look at it to how the Spanish clubs look at it. They're jealous of the Premier League. The Premier League clubs, though, whilst the league is more competitive and it gets more money, because it's more competitive, two of them are going to miss out every single year. And all of this is what underpins a lot of this.
Yeah, I think what they want ultimately is security, and that probably sounds a bit naive and like I'm trying to justify it. I'm not. I think that
certainty. They want certainty.
Yeah. So what's important to them is money. They want as much money as possible. The idea that they don't quite get why the revenue generating clubs don't get a greater share of the revenue from UEFA. That's legitimate. They think they can make a lot more money than they get through UEFA. There is a degree of naked avarice about it. But I think the thing that, certainly to the US owners, and I think probably to the kind of legacy owners of the legacy clubs, rather than the more recently enriched ones, I think what they feel is that too much of their income is dependent on stuff. And that's qualifying for the Champions League. It's finishing in certain positions in the Premier League. And it makes it really hard for them, in their eyes, to kind of keep up with these teams. And there are three of them, City, PSG and Chelsea, who rightly or wrongly, the owners or presidents of the older clubs believe have a bottomless pit of cash to spend. So their sincerely held view is that, you know, if Man City choose to break the British wage record in the middle of a pandemic, they can do it because the money will be found from somewhere. That's what Real Madrid and Barca think. So for them, the appeal isn't just having more money, and in AC Milan's case, it's kind of more money to spend quite badly. Inter Milan's case, Barcelona's case, more than anybody else, actually. It's having the ability to control costs, and that's written into the constitution or whatever, you know, the press release they released yesterday, that I think transfer spending and wage spending has to be 55% of income.
Yeah.
That is to say, we can if we all get the same income. If we can all spend the same amount on wages and transfers, then we suddenly have a level playing field amongst ourselves. And I think that's important to them. It means that they can control, and this is where the US owners come in particularly, they can control their costs. It becomes a much more familiar environment one more akin to the NBA or Major League Baseball or whatever. But also because they have maximized their income, that is steady. There's no risk to the income. The income is tapped out at the top. But more important, maybe not more importantly, but certainly as importantly, they know what they're getting every year. There's no possibility that suddenly you'll be 40 million quid in the hole because both your centre halves have got injured. That's what they want to avoid. And on that bit, I've got to admit, I have a degree of sympathy for them on that. And I think that's where we have to maybe look at football's role in the last 30 years a little bit more broadly to ask whether maybe the people who are stamping their feet now with righteous indignation and not misplaced righteous indignation have maybe helped contribute, being complicit in, allowed the sport to reach a point where this was kind of inevitable.
Well, I mean, this is the overriding structural argument will have been that if you have the ability for spending to be relatively uncontrolled, and you applaud that idea that spending is relatively uncontrolled, and if we're honest about it, that's Jim White surrounded in yellow.
Yeah,
that's what that literally is. If you applaud that, then there becomes, over whatever length of time you want, and our length of time ends on the whatever it is in April in 2021, you end up with this becoming a logical endpoint for somebody somewhere. And I think that's the, when you want to talk about governance, when you want to talk about ownership, when you want to talk about what's positive or what's negative within all of that, we were always going to end up somewhere like here. Before we get into the ins and outs of it and really start putting the boot into people, it is important to acknowledge that. It is important to say that whilst all of that was spiraling, whilst we were applauding world record fees, this was where we were all going to end up.
Yeah, I think it's to do with the, and that's not to, the, I don't want to kind of do the ground that we've covered before, which is that kind of everyone's self-interested. So obviously, like, UEFA don't want the Champions League to become a second-rate competition. Obviously, Crystal Palace don't want the big teams to leave the Premier League, blah, blah, blah. They've all got their self-interest. That's not a particularly, novel or profound insight, I think. And it doesn't necessarily mean that in this case, their self-interest isn't right.
Yeah.
That UEFA might not be doing it for the, pure reasons, but they are basically right with what they're saying. But I think there is a broader issue that... A broader issue makes it sound like whataboutery. I don't mean it to sound like that. I think that we all have to maybe reinterpret the last 30 years, what we've seen, the changes we've seen happen to football, and ask whether maybe we should have resisted a little bit more strongly before we reached this point. I think that's the key thing, that, like you say, like the fetishization of money in football over the last 30 years, and that's basically what's happened, where you get fans going out onto the streets to celebrate transfers happening, or the insatiable demands to sign more players, or the Premier League celebrating the size of its TV deals, or the Deloitte Money Lead, where top of the Deloitte Money Lead, which, by the way, is a company that is profiting from football sort of largesse. Deloitte are not disinterested observers, or whatever it might be. I remember being at the Emirates when Arsenal played Napoli in a pre-season friendly in what I think must have been 2013, and the Arsenal fans booed Gonzalo Higuain, effectively because their club hadn't put a bid in for him and he'd gone somewhere else. And you think, well, I know, what on earth are you booing this slightly overweight Argentinian for? Like, there is no reason for this. But we've all been, and I include myself in this, we've all been a little bit complicit in equating money and power with success in football. And I think there is, looking back, and it sounds a bit kind of wiser after the event, but I think I've probably got on record somewhere a degree of wiser before the event on this one, which is a rarity for me, Neil. This has been obvious that, we can't say we weren't warned. And I think that the biggest failing there is not fans who, fine, you want your club to win, I get that. The biggest failing is UEFA and the Leagues and the national associations, none of whom have done anything to say, all these people with all this money coming into the game, do you think they might want to change it? No one's ever asked that question, it seems. And they've always assumed they could hold the wolf at bay. They could keep the wolf from the door. A lot of wolves involved. Although, ironically, of course, wolves not involved. They've waved through all this money, constantly welcomed it in. The Premier League took so much pride in being ownership neutral. And you sort of think, look, at some point you should have thought, I wonder what, and it's not just Abu Dhabi and Qatar and Abramovich, it's the American hedge funds as well. I wonder what they might want to do with this game they're investing in. Because last night was shocking, but it wasn't really a surprise that this has been coming.
It's been coming, but part of why this is difficult to talk about, and why for me, you said before about the idea of being wise, before or after the event, also the absolute rank hypocrisy that almost anyone who opens their mouth, and I will include myself, by the way, I hasten to add, that there's no moral high ground, and the rank hypocrisy of the vast majority of people pontificating about it from whatever platform is, I think it's difficult to deal with, because everywhere you look, you're able to go, well, hang on, what about this? The UEFA have pushed ahead and announced the Swiss system, for God's sake, this morning. They've just put it out there and said, this is what we're going to do, even though no one's got any sense of who could be in it. But within that, it even has the second thing saying, elite teams that fail to qualify, you can get in through the safety net. And you're thinking, well, this isn't the moral high ground position now. If you're saying, well, to be honest with you, we'll also help people in through the back door. So for me, where I've sort of tried to end on this is, I think it ultimately just will make football worse. Yeah. And I think that, you know, as I'm like, by all means, treat me as a consumer if you want. You know, I am a legacy fan, but by all means, treat me as a consumer if you want. And as a consumer, I'm looking at this thinking, I genuinely think it will make football worse. I think football needs peril. And I think what a lot of this stuff is, and I include the Swiss system in it, but especially this Super League proposal, it's a removal of peril. It's a removal of consequences for failure as long with success. And it doesn't mitigate an all rightish season or a quite good season domestically, but also in this thing, you know, sides could just limp along in this thing, come 13th out of however many, come 11th in the domestic league, and it makes no difference to anybody. And that to me is, the lows matter as much as the highs.
Yeah, I think that's the big problem. There's two big problems with it for me. One is that it's the removal of jeopardy. So it's the, and I think we talked about this before, that you can make a cogent argument that one of the things that US sports do really well, and in fact, I'm just regurgitating your point back at you, Neil, so I apologise. One of the things that US sports do really well is they get big encounters in place between big teams with low stakes, and fans like that. It feels a little bit like, and I don't think we should pretend that football fans are different to fans of any other sport. There's not, you know, we're all human. We all feel allegiances to our teams in similar ways. So I think you can make a case that there are situations in which it would be beneficial to have the big teams playing each other more often. I think it's fair enough that certainly some fans would like that. There does appear to be a bit of a demographic split on how bad this is. But the thing to me that they've missed out completely is that the identity of the teams in the last 16 of the Champions League, which is kind of where football gets really good, who the teams are doesn't really matter. All right, it might be a little bit less of a garlanded event if it's Sevilla against Borussia Dortmund. That maybe does feel a bit like the eighth choice quarterfinal to some extent. But then I'd say whatever teams you put in there, you're going to have an eighth choice last 16 game. Someone's got to be West Brom. Someone's got to be the game you don't watch, because that's the nature of it. So even if it was just the 16 super clubs playing and not Sevilla, who all played wonderful football, some of them would play slightly less wonderful football than the others, and you wouldn't want to watch it as much. But the main thing about those games that makes them special is that they matter, and that there's something riding on it. And if you lose, you're done. And I think what they miss out is this idea that throwing Juve and Barcelona together constantly, twice a year, it's not going to make it matter more. It will make it matter less. And I think that will really damage the product. I think there is a chance that it kind of oversaturates it to a point that people don't find it quite as appealing anymore. That the appeal is to do with the structure and not to do with the identity of the team. And the other thing, the bit that I spent Sunday trying to work out kind of exactly where I stood on it, I'm not as opposed to, I don't necessarily assume, as a lot of people seem to, that the Premier League and the current incarnation of the Champions League or the Swiss model Champions League, whatever, is the natural state of football. Football continually evolves. It evolves all the time. Its competitions are continually in flux. The World Cup changes. The Euros change. The rules changed. You know, everything changed. Football is obsessed with, oh, can we do this? Can we try this? That has been the story of football. That, to be honest, is as much a part of the tradition of football as everything else. Like continually trying to find ways of making more money is a core part of football's history. So I don't necessarily object on any kind of moral level to a European league. There is a formula. I don't know what it is. But it would definitely include more clubs from more than three countries. There is a formula by which I could be sold on a European league. But the bit where they lose me on this one is the permanence of the members. It puts football in an impossible situation, because you can't have those teams in a national league. You just can't. Not because they've disrespected our competition. They'll have far more money than anybody else.
Yeah.
It would destroy the league. It would make it, if you had Man United with £350 million burning a hole in their back pocket just from one season in the Super League, in the, playing in the Premier League as well. How on earth could you give them that that advantage? It would render the competition completely meaningless. But also the fact that they can't be relegated, that they will always have a continual supply of the money that they've arranged for themselves to have, is effectively taking the rewards on 100 years of football history, on the growth of the game into this incredible phenomenon, and saying, right, we're having that. You lot don't get it. And that would be fine if only they built the popularity, but they haven't. They're just part of it. They're a big part of it. And we maybe for a little while we've romanticized and nostalgicized away from quite how big they are, those big brands are, in terms of football's global success. But it's not all because of them. Therefore, they can't claim all of the rewards. That's the bit that I really fall down on.
The bit, that's an excellent way to phrase the bit that you really fall down on. I think the other thing as well is the, when you say about the permanence, it is that ultimately football has to find that moment of tension. And that to me is what is where this is just where this all goes awry, because it's not just the idea that Manchester United have that money and it's permanent, it's also that they get to fail with that money and know that that money will still be there no matter what. Liverpool, obviously, in the very, very, very much the similar boat. And I feel as though they also just can't be in the domestic league, because ultimately, what does it look like? Like, ultimately, is there still going to be a UEFA competition that's going on? So you've got to take these teams out. So who's ninth is going to be going to this? The 11th will get into the Europa League because Arsenal had a bit of a bad year and they're sitting in 10th. But it doesn't matter for Arsenal because they're still going to be in that anyway. It feels as though whilst they can try and make this work for themselves very, very quickly, the next phase of this is, well, it feels to me a little bit like, and that's the way in which it comes out last night, they've just basically gone, is this, and everyone's got to deal with it.
Yeah, I think there's an element of that. And I think that they, you can see why they took that approach. And that's because football's not resisted so far. So why on earth would they assume that it would be able to mount a concerted resistance now? Because every other red line has been trampled over. And ultimately, we've not only accepted the consequences of it, we've kind of celebrated quite a lot of them. We've kind of been like, yeah, this is great. I'm genuinely enjoying this. This is much better. You know, this, the Champions League group stage is boring, but, you know, look at the last 16, it's amazing. You can see why they thought, do you know what, we can do whatever we want and people will brush their tongues. That is, it's people will brush their tongues. That's, that is the, which is a reference that might be a little bit obscure now. But we've bought everything they've sold us for 30 years and no one's really batted an eyelid. So you can see why they kind of think, all right, do you know what we do? We're just going to do this and there'll be a lot of fury at the start, but we'll force it through, we'll get around all the obstacles, and when we're actually on the pitch and it's Barcelona against Inter Milan in the European Super League, and one's going to finish 12th and the other's going to finish 13th, but it doesn't matter which, because neither of them are getting relegated, people will come along and watch, and, you know, we'll sell the TV rights, it'll be massive. You can see why they think that. I think that I found that the calls to, like, dock them points, like, from the domestic league, and I missed the point spectacurally, did you sort of think, well, surely the whole point of this entire thing is that they don't care how many points they get in the domestic league. Like, that is literally the last thing they're interested in, is how many points they get in the domestic league. They want that to not matter at all.
Unless they're winning it.
But also, I think it is far more complicated than that, because if the leagues and the FAs and UEFA, even FIFA, if they start banning clubs, if they start banning players from international tournaments, if they start kicking clubs out of the league, then this idea that, oh, well, it will all be better off without them. I understand why people say that. I understand the appeal of that thought process, but I don't think it's true. I just don't think it's true. I think that those big clubs drive a lot of the appeal and the interest. And if you don't have them, then the Premier League itself, or Serie A or La Liga, is less interesting to people.
You game it all out. They'd absolutely love FIFA to say, oh, your players can't play in a World Cup, because they'll just put their own World Cup on and sell the media rights with their players.
Yeah.
They'd absolutely love it. Yeah. It'd be something else that they could sell, which they wouldn't even have to do the actual club-by-club sort of basis for. And they would just say, well, all right, our World Cup will be better than your World Cup. And that's why I think FIFA's statement's interestingly guarded, actually.
Yeah.
FIFA's statement is, whoa, we did say something recently, but, you know, let's just all take a little bit of a breath here. And I do think the let's just take a little bit of a breath here thing could be how it does eventually get walked back. Last little thing I want to do before we imagine what happens next is just to briefly talk about the role of governments and supernatural supernatural.
Supernatural bodies. Yeah.
Supranational
bodies. Ghost conference. What do we think ghosts make of this?
Loads and loads of people from the Matthews final playing. There is, I think, I've always felt, you know, you look at cultural organisations in the United Kingdom, just to start there, and there's lots of very strict rules about what those cultural organisations can and can't do. You don't get to run a national trust property and do whatever you want with it. You don't get to own a list of building and do whatever you want with it. There's rules around what can and can't be done in art galleries and who gets to run them and the responsibilities that they have. A lot of this is, and has been for a while, people deciding that football is not culture. And it's part of why we've ended up in this mess where, frankly, until the Newcastle thing, it felt as though anybody would, within reason, be able to run and own a football club and go where they want. And there is a political element to this, which is that for decades, really, there's been massive shortcomings in terms of government regulation.
Yeah, I think the problem is that football clubs clearly are cultural and social institutions. That's how we interpret them. We are emotionally bonded to them, like we are to, well, it's not like I've got on like a V&A scarf, but you know, they occupy the same place in our kind of cultural psychology. But they are also actually just businesses. Deep down, they are also businesses, and they behave like businesses, and they're treated in many ways like businesses. And in fact, a lot of the things that we celebrate about them are the things that businesses celebrate. You know, we think it's brilliant when they make a spectacular hire. I guess you might be delighted when a theatre gets a great headline act, or when an art gallery, you know, picks up a Rubens on the cheap. I don't know. Like, I think that they're run as businesses, they're treated as businesses, and they're acting like businesses. And to an extent, to them, what this is a load of companies on a retail park where they pay rent, thinking, do you know what, we could just build our own retail park, and then we don't have to pay rent, and we'll take the initial hit, but then all the money that we get from leasing out the other property, I don't know how business park, office parks work, but you know, we will take the money. I think the difficulty
but businesses operate within regulatory terms. So, for instance, you know, to take an absolutely extreme example, you can't buy heroin at Boots. That, you know, you cannot. I want to be very clear, just in case anyone from Boots' legal team are listening, you cannot.
And you should not try.
No, under no circumstances. But you, therefore, it's obviously legal, but what I mean is it's regulation.
Yeah.
And if you were to say that football clubs could be run by these people, that they can be run in this way, that this is the regulatory body, but we've not wanted to regulate football because we think it's some sort of grand British success story because it's in the Premier League, the greatest league in the world.
But it's also true, it's true of Europe as well, that everyone's been so dazzled by, partly by the product. I think fans have been dazzled by the product, and I think the people involved have been dazzled by the money. And it's fallen into this crack where they are businesses, and I know everyone gets very cross when you say they're more than a business, but they are businesses deep down. They are also social and cultural institutions, and also it's a form of entertainment. So the whole thing, the story, is the money. The money is the story. The money is the plot. And so it's kind of it's a bit like Boots. It's a bit like the V&A, and it's a bit like the Kardashians. It's all of them, and that means that nobody really wants to. Not even wants to, but knows what they're meant to be doing. Like, who's meant to be in charge of this? What are we meant to be protecting it from? Just to be honest, if the government had stepped in 15 years ago and said, look, we're going to limit Premier League club spending, and all those big stars had gone to Barcelona or Real Madrid or wherever, fans would have been furious. That's not what people wanted. To pretend that's what people wanted is completely delusional and slightly hypocritical and full of this sort of weird denial. It falls in the cracks. And the other problem, which is something we've touched on a lot whenever we speak, is that the people who are meant to be the regulators are also, because it does have, there are regulatory bodies, they are also part of the product. They are more than regulators. So, you know, the FA is the regulator of the ultimate regulator of football in England, but it's also a competition organiser that wants the best teams in its competitions. And it's also, in a sense, a competing team, a competing entertainment entity that wants those clubs to provide players to it. So it wasn't in their interest to stop the boom years or to put a brake on it, because they were benefiting too. Same with the Premier League. Same with UEFA. Yeah.
And that's the big thing. It's same with UEFA. That UEFA are not just acting as a regulator. They are instead acting as a purveyor of the entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that compromises their position and has compromised their position for 30 years. And it's great to an extent that UEFA seem to have found a bit of bottle and said, right, we're not going to stand for this. We won't just let you do what you like. Whether that holds or not, I don't know. But UEFA didn't have to wait until Sunday, April the 18th, 2021 to do it. They've had chances before.
Or they could have just chosen to act as a regulator and given that bit to somebody else. They could have said, we're in charge, but this bit belongs to somebody else and it's all transparent and that's how it works.
And it's the same with FIFA. So FIFA, you know, this idea that FIFA might ride in as the knight in shining armour, but FIFA compromised too, because they want the best players for their World Cup, but they also want to run a club World Cup that's bigger than the Champions League. And actually, this might help them, because what if you then got a Pan-American lead and a Pan-African lead and a Pan-Asian lead, and then they all met in a big jamboree every 2 years and FIFA ran it and got all the money? That'd be amazing. So the problem is that everyone is trying to play both sides. Everyone, Tariq Panja, my colleague, used it on a podcast this morning. Everyone is speaking from both sides of their mouth. And it is impossible to know where I don't know if anybody holds any sincerely held views, to be perfectly honest. I don't even know if Gary Neville's view is sincerely held or fully thought through. I think that everyone is part of this ecosystem that has fed on the money forever and now has decided almost arbitrarily in the eyes of the people who are planning the league that enough is enough. And I'm not quite sure that they will understand, the plotters, the conspirators will understand why this is the point at which everyone goes, oh no, you can't do that, when they have waived everything else through.
Just very quickly then, what happens? You just said, I don't know either. I'm trying to look at it, I'm trying to game out sort of different bits and pieces here. I don't think you can have a situation where those six sides are expelled from the Premier League, because I just don't think the Premier League can function. That's the one thing I've got a relative amount of surety on. Everything else to me just looks absolutely wild.
Yeah, same. I can't really see a world in which the leagues can kick them out. It's so obviously not in their own interests. But at the same time, it's not really in their interest to keep them in, because as you say, it kind of makes the whole thing defunct. That you'll either have these clubs that have got so much money that they render competition completely futile and meaningless, or they just don't take the league seriously, so it loses all of its appeal. And you know, you can say, oh, isn't it brilliant? Does Newcastle to win the league? But if Newcastle won the league because the bid six weren't trying, it would mean less. And if you think it wouldn't mean less, you're kidding yourself, to be perfectly honest. So I don't see a way out. I don't know whether governments in the EU can do anything about it. I don't really see, if I'm completely honest, why government would do anything about it. I don't really see what business it is of theirs that the clubs are effectively leaving one competition organiser for another. I don't know if there's any kind of legal basis for that, unless you kind of repurpose football teams as full-on community, you know, community cultural institutions, which you can certainly make a case they should be, but people tend not to invest too much in community cultural institutions. And you need, as you say, there's this whole thing of football is Britain's great export. So I don't know. I don't know where it goes. I suspect it goes to the courts. The clubs, the 12 have... I'd have thought they should have gone for like 14, just as it's much harder to think of like a damning term for 14 clubs. Obviously, you know, Dirty Dozen, just a dozen, a full dozen will be a Dirty Dozen. It shouldn't be a Dirty Dozen if it's 11, 12 or 13, doesn't matter. 14 is safe. You can't, there's no sort of obvious shorthand for 14. So I suspect it goes to the courts. I suspect the UEFA and the Premier League try and the leagues themselves try everything to do it. But I think, to be honest, if the clubs are really committed to it, it will happen. Ultimately, I think it will happen. And I wonder, actually, if the brinkmanship now is not to see if they can make it happen so that they do leave the domestic leagues as well. So they actually say, if you won't have us, we'll go on our own and we will blow the whole thing up. And that, I think, is a worryingly realistic scenario.
I think if it goes all the way, it can very quickly become 32 clubs. And then it's 32 clubs with two divisions of 16, and then it would have promotion and relegation, but it will be closed. So the 32 will be the end. It will be 32, and these are the 32. And this is where we play and what we're about. And this is what we do every single year. We have a pre-season tournament every 2 or 3 years. We get involved with the FIFA tournament. I think that's where they may well end up, is that they manage to create a situation where they actually have it, and it's really fluid promotion and relegation in between the two as well. And you're just basically saying all the best players play in here.
Or you do it, you expand it further. And this is the one thing, as I say, I don't necessarily object to like a continental league. The one thing that you would need for anything to be even vaguely valid to me, the first step would have to have much more geographical spread. And that would involve Galatasaray and Fenerbahce, and it would involve probably Zenit St. Petersburg, and at least a couple of representatives from Eastern Europe and Scandinavia and Holland and Portugal. You could make a case that the way that they might look at it is to say, well, actually, do you know what? If what we're trying to do is Major League Baseball or the NFL, let's have 40 teams and playoffs. And that way, I'm not saying it's what I want or that I approve, but that gets you all of the knockout games that you want that make it that make it entertaining, that make mean that there is interest for everyone throughout the season. Because that's the great secret of the NFL, is that you can lose your first five games, you can still be in with a shout of making the playoffs. And I wonder whether in the long run, and it might be 15, 20, 30 years down the line, that's the way it goes, that they say, all right, do you know what, this is the format that we've got, this kind of 10-team conference format, that's what we're going to go with, but we quite fancy another 20 teams, please. Who wants to join? We've got lots of money to make it worth your while. And yeah, my main feeling now is that I don't quite see how football goes back. I don't see a way back to where we were on Saturday. I just don't see. And that in turn means, you know, what does any of this mean? What does Spurs sack him? Why Spurs sack Mourinho? Doesn't matter whether they're in the Champions League. Just wait it out for a year, lads.
Liverpool playing Leeds tonight. I've got no idea what's riding on it. No. Thank you very, very much to Rory Smith for this. There'll be more of this. Hopefully there'll be more Rory as well. TheAnfieldRap.com. We put this one out for free, but if you fancy subscribing, now would be a good time, both in general, because obviously there haven't been many games, and also we've got no idea what's happening. So TheAnfieldRap.com/subscribe. It's not the smoothest sales pitch you'll ever hear, that, if we're all honest, but it's a very honest one. So TheAnfieldRap.com/subscribe to all of our stuff, everything that we do. Christ only knows what happens next. Sports Social Podcast Network.